Becoming a member at Navy Federal Credit Union could help you to earn more and save more. Their certificate options could earn you more than standard savings accounts with competitive rates.
Not all financial institutions offer you as many choices for savings options as Navy Federal does. For example, you can start your savings journey with a low minimum deposit, add money at any time, and watch your savings grow. Thanks to flexible terms, you can use Navy Federal savings options for all kinds of goals, short or long term. Navy Federal also offers equity loan options to help you get the funds you need to consolidate high interest debt, work on home improvements, or cover any of life's big expenses.
To learn more, visit NavyFederal.org. At Navy Federal, their members are the mission. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender, membership required. Terms and conditions apply, loan subject to approval. In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Hala talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today, we're answering your listener questions.
Of course, it's Monday, and listeners know we've got listener questions to get to. We've got a whole
host?
Slate. Host, right. Is like, yeah, I guess a host of, it's like individuals, but like a slate feels like options.
Yeah.
And we've got some great options, some great questions to answer today.
I was just thinking, I want to say I have a case of the Mondays and mean it as a good thing.
Makes me think of Monday Night Brewing, their mix pack of one of their beers. They called it a case of the Mondays because they're Monday night, and it was,
and yet it's a beautiful thing, right?
It's a fantastic thing. Let's put a positive spin on it.
We can change the narrative on that.
Some of the topics we're getting to today, a listener is asking about an important investing deadline. We'll get to that. Another listener is wondering what might be the best way to build up some generational wealth. And another fascinating one, what financial advice would you give to your younger selves? For instance, if we had to start all over again. Essentially, they're asking about financial regrets. Mm. So I'm looking forward to getting that to that one and more during today's episode.
Same. All right. One just quick note on the generational wealth one. You know what I love about that question? The optimism behind it. Like in an age of doomerism and people saying like the end is near, the belief that you can and should try to attain generational wealth says no way. Like I think that there's plenty of good things coming down the pike. So I'm wholeheartedly behind that.
Sure. But is it misplaced optimism? Maybe we'll get to that as well.
See, I don't think it's misplaced optimism. We'll talk about that. But but maybe it's still not the right path. But all right. Well, before we get to all those questions, Matt, let's talk about how much to spend on a vacation. I saw this article on The Art of Manliness. And interestingly enough, The Art of Manliness, it's a website and a podcast that is pretty thoughtful. And I think like even a lot of women could get behind a lot of the content on there.
Just about living intentionally as opposed to being asleep at the wheel in all areas of life.
Yes.
I feel like we do that when it comes to money specifically, but Brett McKay, isn't that the guy?
Yeah, he does a great job. He and his wife, I think, do it together. And
oh, nice.
I think probably they started off as kind of this manly thing and about growing like cool stashes and dressing nicely. And then like as he grew as a person, the kind of topics that he covered grew and changed. And now it's really, I think, appealing to all sorts of folks. But he just had an article about how much you should spend on a vacation. What is the right rule of thumb, Matt? How much do you think people should be spending or thinking about spending on upcoming travels? And I think this is probably the time of year people are starting to plan out summer travels. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts for them?
Yeah. Okay. You give me a heads up. So I need to go do some digging in my own. I'm a nerd, and so I have the ability to pull up previous years of expenses. And what I found, are you interested to figure out what I uncovered?
Always.
You were literally my personal finance data.
Earlier today, Matt was telling me how much he spent on car repairs in like 2017 through 2023. And
oh my gosh, why does it cost so much to, what did you just have fixed? A solenoid or something on your Odyssey. And I was like, interesting.
Head gasket.
So. Yeah. And so I was like, oh, you know what? I actually did the same thing 2 years ago. Yada, yada. But I think that was fresh in my mind, which is what made me want to go digging through our vacation spending over the past decade plus. I mean, I only looked at the past decade. And I found that...
You could have gone further.
I could have gone further. But I found that we spent, like, on average, typically, about 2% of our income on vacation. And so, yeah, when the general rule of thumb, general personal finance advice of spending 5 to 10%, personally, I'm like, I see that and I think... Oh, that seems kind of high. But then when I went and dug through, I'm like, well, is it high compared to what I have spent? And it truly is. I mean, there's some years where we literally only spent 1% of our overall income. And you want to know what year that was specifically?
When?
Well, you were involved. I don't know if we've ever talked about this. We had bartered with some clients of ours, and they gave us... For a discount, they gave us their Jekyll Island house. And it had a bunch of rooms. And so what we did... Well, I created a Google Sheet.
You've done that multiple times.
We did that twice. We did that 2 years in a row, but one of those really affordable years was that year.
Well, when you sold the house.
I created a sheet, but it allowed all of our friends to show up. They basically were able to claim a room, and I charged them $20 a night. Because I was basically, you know, like we were taking a financial hit by accepting that house. But it's like, okay, how can the clients win? How can I win? And how can our friends win? I mean, we had folks who were staying with us at the beach for like $100.
Yeah.
which is unheard of. So... All that to say, 5 to 10%, I think that might be a touch high, personally, I think.
Not everyone can barter like you can, or could, I guess. But I think one of the things that happens when you reduce the budget that you're willing to spend on vacations is you have to get more creative. And that creativity, I think, can lead to some really interesting trips and excursions. So
Especially when you're younger like that, too. It was so sticky. It's not like that was a sacrifice.
No.
It was a ton of fun. We had folks... dropping in for a couple days. You and Emily, I think y'all were there literally, I think, the whole time. Y'all claimed the other room that I think had the king size bed as well.
We played a lot of spike ball while we were out there.
A lot of board games, spike ball, and craft beer. What's better than that, man?
So, I think in this article, he highlights 5 to 10% as a good rule of thumb. I do think, don't cheap out, right? And don't avoid spending money on vacations because I think they can create amazing memories. But also don't think that just by spending more money, you're going to create better memories. I think sometimes we associate that, or we think, if I shell out an extra $4,000 for the vastly more expensive beach house, then the memories are going to be superior. And I don't think that's true in the same way. Although, take your vacation, spend money on vacations, enjoy it, but just don't overdo it.
Totally agree. Yeah. And here's the thing is I'm totally fine with somebody spending even more money than that if that is their craft beer equivalent, right? Like if there's somebody who's saying, well, dudes, I love to travel. That is my thing. Like your sister, her and her husband, they travel all the time. And in my mind, I don't know her super, super well, but it seems like that is her craft beer equivalent.
They're like super minimalist, frugal people.
It doesn't seem like they spend a lot of money on many other things.
But they'll drop money on a flight or a hotel at the drop of a hat.
All the time. Yeah. Like anytime I see them, I'm like, all right, where are you headed next? Because that's always the topic of interest, whatever country and whatever awesome trip that they're taking. I'm totally fine with that. You can't do that on everything. But like you said, if you're more of a minimalist in other areas and you want to maximize the amount that you're spending towards travel, I'm totally for that.
You
can also change it because we didn't spend much back in the day, but last year, so
we ramped it up.
I said on average it was like around 2%, right? But last year it was closer to 8%.
Yeah,
because
depends on the
Scotland
life
trip
you're in.
With y'all. We did like a whole week at Disney and Universal. That's certainly a more expensive year.
And by the way, I'm talking about my sister, they live in a one bedroom midtown apartment. It's not cheap, but I guess it's small, right? And they have one car, and it's like a 12-year-old Honda.
Yeah.
So those are the
kind
of things.
The one that bounces around to get the rent discounts.
That's right,
as well. So
like if you're doing all those other things, then guess what? You can afford to turn up the dial a little bit on your vacation spending.
Yeah, I love it.
All right, Matt. Let's mention the beer we're having on this episode. This one is called Bone Shaker, which sounds like the name of a monster truck.
Bone Shaker.
It's by Moat Mountain. And this one was donated to the show by listener Todd.
That's right.
So Todd, thank you.
It's got a biking motif. So Bone Shaker in the sense of mountain biking and I guess not having shocks, but not in the monster truck variety.
Sadly. Because I like monster trucks.
Well, I like bikes better, though.
They're both great. All right. By the way, we're going to take a lot of listener questions, Matt. So let's get to those.
Let's do it.
And if you're out there listening and you're like, I have a money question, and I would love those two gentle, sweet idiots to take it on the show, please do submit it to us. We'd love to hear it. You can go to howtomoney.com/ask. Simple instructions there, basically recording a voice memo, sending it to us via email. Matt, let's get to the first one. This one comes from listener Chapman, and he's wondering if he can take an investing route that avoids the stock market.
Hey, Matt and Joel, thanks for taking my question. First off, I'm wondering your advice on long-term retirement goals. If I were to plan on owning several investment properties, that will hopefully be paid off when I'm ready for a soft retirement in my 40s. So with that being said, how should I be prioritizing investments to retirement accounts in the stock market if I really want to do real estate? Right now, I have a 401k and Roth 401k option at work. I have $3,500 in it, and I started it as a Roth option because I assumed that was better. But which one of those would be best to go with if I'm going to invest in real estate? And also, how should I choose how much to put in retirement and how much to go with real estate, considering I need a lot of money up front now to buy my second property because we already own our first house? Secondly, I would just love any of your advice on kids and specifically newborns. We're about to have our first child in 2 weeks. So would love any advice on that and maybe your dad hacks or anything like that. Thanks. I'm a big fan and I appreciate your guys' level-headed advice on the show. So thanks.
Level-headed financial advice. That should be the subtitle of our show, Joel. So Chapman is asking, let's kick it off with the dad hacks because he's got a baby on the way. Congrats. You probably already have that baby at this point. But what we would say, and I think, Joel, you'd be in agreement here, but prioritize the time that you're spending together. I think early on, this is going to be a lot easier to do than when you are, like when the kids are older and you're maybe a little busier, or even when you have like multiple kids. So that's where my mind immediately goes, because we've got four kids, Joel, you've got three, and it becomes harder to do spending like one-on-one time with the kids where you don't have the other ones clamoring for your attention.
Mm-hmm.
Kate and I, we've instituted mommy daddy dates where we alternate weeks and we'll take one of the kids. It's an uninterrupted period of time where we get to spend some quality time together. But Chapman, for you, that again, you've only got one kid, so keep that in mind, I guess, when you have multiple kids. But what has changed, one dynamic that certainly has changed, is the relationship between you and your wife or your significant other, your partner. And so I guess this is somewhat unconventional dad hack, you know, new baby advice, but make sure that you are prioritizing the amount of time, the quality of time that you're spending with your partner as well, because I think that is foundational. Like that is the bed. That should be the bedrock of your family. And if that suffers, yes, you might have a cute baby that you're excited to talk about nonstop. And that's totally natural. I get that. They're tiny, cute little thing. But if you aren't leaving room for the two of y'all and for y'all to remember what it is that brought y'all together in the first place, then I think over time, that high that you currently have with that new baby, that wears off and you get more into the day-to-day drudgery of it.
You start to drift apart if you're not prioritizing each other at the same time. And you're right, Matt, the baby who is a bundle of joy can turn into this like cleaver that's separating your... No, I'm just kidding. Not like that. I don't mean it like that. But like it really can cause some drift if you're not being intentional on that front. And I think maybe some of the habits, Matt, even like, you know, you're not really typically reading to a newborn, but like you can start if you want, I guess, but that kind of like prioritizing that schedule and that rhythm, hopefully that can like stick around for years to come. And I know that like, yeah, the bedtime, the breakfast, the dinner routines for us are just, I hate to miss it. Like if I'm out of town randomly for a couple of days, like I'm so stoked to get back for it. So just making sure those rhythms are ingrained, I think is going to be incredibly helpful. It's going to create kind of some of those important family bonds that are going to deepen those relationships and make them even more meaningful over time.
Totally.
Yeah. Let's talk about Chapman's question, specifically his money question. He mentioned retiring in his 40s, and I think he called it a soft retirement. I think that's an amazing goal, by the way, to want to retire that early. And I'm curious to know what he means by a soft retirement. I don't know exactly, but my guess is that what he means is that he wants a more flexible work and work optional sort of approach, right?
Kind
of the peace out money sort of thing that we've talked about in the past. having the ability to do whatever you want, even if you decide that you're going to keep working or just dial it back a little bit on that front. And a coast fire, I guess, is what folks in the FI community refer to it as. And I think that's a great goal to have. I mean, front loading the sacrifice so that you give yourself more options down the road, even if you do decide to keep working in some capacity, which, let's be honest, Matt, most people do, going from working 40 hours a week to hitting your FI number, quote unquote FI number or whatever, and then ditching work completely, actually ends up leading to a lot of unhappiness for people in that crowd. So it's just, but having the ability and having the options can be such a psychological relief. I understand why people go that route. I mean, so I think this is something you can create for yourself by starting early and by being incredibly intentional. I think if Chapman takes the right approach, he can wind up there.
Totally. Yeah. And you mentioned front-loading the sacrifice, and we were just talking about vacations, but I think that's just a great small example of ways that you might be able to be a little more flexible now.
Sure.
Where you're deferring some of that live and large so that you do have some of those options.
Yeah, you're like, okay, I think
further down the road,
if you want to retire in your 40s, it's going to mean dialing back on a bunch of different things.
Mm-hmm.
Probably your car, your home, your vacations, all that kind of stuff, because if it's that high of a priority, like, you've got a limited timeline to really get there, and you've got to kind of put everything you got behind it.
That's right, yeah. And having some paid-off rental properties, that could be a good path forward. So how should you be looking to balance your interest in real estate as well as your tax-advantaged retirement accounts? And so much depends on your risk tolerance. So, Joel, literally, we were joking after last Wednesday's episode. We talked about real estate maximalist Alan Corey. And this is you and I, like, after the recording, but we were saying how he might not have any money in the actual stock market.
Yeah. He might. We didn't ask him, but.
Yeah, but, like, it kind of makes sense because he has gone so hard in that direction. He is such an expert within that realm. And personally, we don't feel comfortable with that, even though we are investors of real estate. But Alan has honed a skill, and I don't think I would fault him if he didn't have anything within a traditional retirement account. But is that the route that Chapman should take?
And or I think, most people in general.
Or everybody else. Yeah, I think it depends on, well, it depends on your market. It depends on how much time you're willing to dedicate towards investing in real estate. You need to know what the numbers look like. Financing is a part of it. And it's not purely passive either, right? Like, that's the biggest difference between investing in real estate, Chapman, is essentially you're signing yourself up. Maybe you're saying soft retirement because you want to have the time on hand to be able to manage these properties yourself. Well, good, because that's what's going to be necessary if you are going to be taking that on yourself.
Yeah, if you
as opposed to investing in the stock market, which is purely passive.
And if you want to better cash flow, better returns from those properties, it's going to mean self-management, but that takes time, right? And if you're going to be the super too, right? If you're going to be over there replacing the toilets, doing the fixes, and Matt, you and I have talked about this before, some people overblow that. Oh, the 3 a.m. toilet bursting phone call. I've never had that one. But that's always what gets described from people who don't want to be landlords. And it's fine if you don't want to be a landlord. But Chapman wants to be. And I think, you know, some of that stuff's just bluster. It's not true. But it's at least worth thinking about what that looks like in your life.
Yeah.
And the amount of time you're going to need to dedicate and what the ROI is going to be on that.
Totally. I think it depends too on your personal preference and what it is that you're looking for out of your overall portfolio. Because this is where, like, I think you and I differ slightly in some of the, like, the finer points or whatever. But about 5 years ago, I'm looking at my overall net worth and my asset allocation, essentially, of my investments. And I'm like, man, I've got way more money in real estate than I personally felt comfortable with. And so for me, what that looked like, and this is back when rates were stupid low, but I went ahead and refied, pulled equity out because I wanted to have more of my overall percentage of my portfolio invested in the market. And so for me, it was almost like a right sizing because I was like, oh, I feel like I'm too heavy within real estate. And so essentially, that was personal preference. And so that's something else to consider, Chapman, is what do you want your net worth to be made of?
Well, yeah, I think this leads to the next thing we need to talk about perfectly, because for the sake of conservatism and diversification, I think it's still a good idea to do some of both, right? So
especially early on.
Yeah. For the extreme person who learns a skill and does it incredibly well, like Alan, who we talked to, then I think it's okay maybe to go all in on one thing. If you have an outsized advantage, take advantage of that outsized advantage. So if you reach this point, Chapman, in your real estate investing journey where you've got this amazing system, you feel like you know, traditional retirement account investing and contributing to those is holding you back from scaling something that you've become an expert at, that could tip the scales, I think, eventually to reducing your, to dialing back those retirement contributions. But for the time being, I think we would both say, Matt, do both. It's going to take more time then to buy the rental property you want. It's going to take more time to save up that down payment, but it's worth the delay because you're mitigating your risk and you are creating some of that diversification. So which account, you asked specifically, which account you should start investing in? We would say make sure to take advantage of whatever match you're offered in a 401k. And then after that, probably the Roth IRA. It's just such a flexible account. It's such a good one.
Gives you options.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. I think if you're getting the match where you work, you're maxing out the Roth, then all the money that's left after that, I'd feel comfortable socking those dollars away into your rental down payment fund.
Yeah. And going back to this idea of diversification, I think what's important to point out here is that, Chapman, like, you think right now that you want to go all in on real estate, but generally speaking, you've just gotten your toes wet. And it's tough to know what life is going to look like in a couple of years. You're about to have a baby. What does that mean for your partner? What does that mean for your career, your job, the amount of time that's going to be required of you?
Yeah, triplets could be next, Matt. You never know.
And well, even still, right now, he's thinking through, okay, it's pretty easy for me to run down there, change out the locks, schedule cleaners, whatever is required of him at this point when it comes to managing that one property that he has. But beyond that, like 5 years from now, with a five-year-old in tow, that could look a whole lot different. And so what I'm pointing out here is that, like you said, Joel, continuing to invest in the market, obviously taking advantage of that match, but also continuing forward with real estate, it gives you the option a few years from now to then decide, okay, what do I now want to continue to go after hard? Because mm-hmm. there might be another, like a completely another opportunity at work, or maybe you want to start your own side hustle, you're going to go down the path of entrepreneurship. That could be something that you're excited about. And then it would be a little more difficult to say, perhaps make the numbers work with real estate if you now have to rely on management because you're paying your 10 to 15% because you don't have a network because you're doing it yourself.
Well,
you don't
15 have a, would be high. Let's hope not.
A manager who's cutting you a discount rate at like 7, 8%.
You get fleeced if you do that, Chapman.
If you got multiple properties, that's all.
Okay, I think let me just say one thing or a couple things maybe on the super positive side of real estate. I think one reason to invest in real estate, especially if you have the goal of early retirement, is because having that mortgage, the mortgage stays the same while rents continue to increase over time. That is a generality, but it is over time true because rents do moderate sometimes. We're seeing that in Austin right now. We're seeing that actually in other places across the United States too. But that's going to put you in the position over the years to have greater cash flow the further you move along that ownership timeline. And so just like Alan mentioned last week, Matt, you aren't tapping into the capital like you do with an investment account, right? So collecting rents doesn't have the same psychological impact that taking money out of a retirement account has. So and it doesn't have the same tax consequences either if you're pulling money out of a retirement account early. So I would just say, remember, if early retirement's on your radar and you're investing, by the way, for even more decades, and that real estate, it can provide cash flow in those early retirement years, and the money you're putting into traditional accounts can help fund those later decades, you want to make sure of both. One last thing I'll say is if you're planning on doing some house hacking, I think that can move real estate investing up the ladder, even above maybe some of those traditional retirement accounts. Because not only are you investing in real estate, you're making a personal sacrifice to increase the gains you can see in those real estate endeavors. And we have a whole episode that we did with Craig Kurlop on house hacking that we'll link to in the show notes.
That's right. We'll include that up at howtomoney.com. But Joel, we've got more to get to today. We're going to hear from a listener who's trying to figure out what to do with some company stock that he owns. We'll get to that and more right after this.
Cachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics, and in other words, everything your body craves to feel your best. This is where Cachava really earns their 52,000-plus five-star reviews. It tastes amazing. It's creamy and smooth with just water, and it comes in five delicious flavors. You can choose from chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, and coconut acai. Cachava is offering How to Money listeners 10% off for a limited time. I've been using Cachava in breakfast smoothies in the morning recently. It's just so nice to pack in a bunch of nutrients early in the AM in a way that's satisfying and energizing. So if you want to optimize your breakfast, your workout shake, be sure to check out Cachava. Just go to Cachava.com. kachava.com/howtomoney. That's spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's kachava.com/howtomoney. Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So, if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org. I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host. Or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. All right, we're back. Matt, we got more listener questions to get to. And this next one, it's not about investing for retirement. It's about investing for future generations.
Hi, Matt and Joel. AJ here from Coralville, Iowa. My wife and I have hit a couple of amazing milestones and achievements recently, and they have gotten me thinking. First of all, we are 28 in Money Gear 7 and just hit our theoretical COSFI number with some help from the recent market upswing. Second, and much more importantly, we just had the birth of our firstborn child. Before I ask my question, I want to share that we are 100% on board and agree with the common airplane metaphor of you have to take care of yourself in order to effectively take care of others. While we have no intention to take our foot off the gas, our son being born has made us think about tax-efficient ways to pass money from generation to generation. Just to be clear, we do still plan on contributing to our retirement accounts, and we have several other money goals that we are still striving towards. We have started a 529 account under our son's name and are looking for other opportunities to grow our future family's wealth under current tax codes and laws. My question is, do you two have any recommendations for where we can get started? Thank you so much for considering this question. And if you guys are in the Coralville or Iowa City area, there are several great beers that I'd love to show you. Thank you so much for all that you do. And I appreciate your time with this question.
Matt, what's in the water? All the How to Money listeners having babies.
Honestly, like, I love hearing from folks who are in this stage of life, right? Because there's so much change. It's an incredibly dynamic period of life where life changes.
It changes quick. You become a different person every few years, it feels like.
You do, but it's a good thing, but it certainly requires some changes maybe to how it is that you are preparing for the future. And, yeah. And in this case, AJ, it sounds like they've been doing an incredible job. He said they're in Money Gear number seven at this
28,
which is unreal, but sort of like what we're saying with Chapman. I don't know. I really like the overall philosophy of giving yourself options, and I'm glad to hear that you're not completely giving up on investing. You're saying that, like, yes, we want to make sure that we're setting money aside for our kids, but we're still going to continue investing ourselves. And I think it's so important to do that for a couple of reasons. A, he mentioned the recent returns of the stock market that we've seen in the market. Like, basically over the past year, we've seen like a 30% return. Well, don't count on that. Like, it's great that we've all experienced that, but it's not normal. And we want to make sure that you have prepared for scenarios and situations that aren't just the best case scenario. But then going back to kind of what we're talking about with Chapman, right now is when your expenses are probably going to be the lowest they'll ever be in your life. And I say this maybe from personal experience, because I remember like 10 years ago sitting down with Kate and even then we had nerdy financial review meetings at the end of the year. I feel like it's about a decade ago. We sat down and we're like, all right, we can be financially independent in about 5 years, three if we really get after it. But then life happens. Like, you have a kid, or there are different other interests that you have, or like basically you're spending more money. And what we're talking about here is lifestyle creep. And typically, like, lifestyle creep is this boogeyman. Like, we always see it as like this big bad thing that's terrible and that we should be avoiding at all costs. But I don't think that's necessarily true. As long as you are mindfully spending your money in a way that reflects your values, I think it's totally fine to reap some of the rewards of the sacrifices that you've made, of some of that front-loading the sacrifice for approach sure. that a lot of folks have taken.
Intentional lifestyle creep instead of just kind of happenstance.
Exactly, exactly. So all that to say, AJ, I think you're in a period of time now, and I'm not at all trying to discount what you have been able to accomplish up until now. I think it is amazing that y'all are in the position where you are. I'm just commending you for continuing to invest, because you never, yeah, stuff gets more expensive. Your interests change, and there's a chance that you switch to hobbies or your interests lead you to saving money mm-hmm. over the next 5 to 10 years. But I think that's pretty rare. Like, typically, especially with kids on board, you spend more money. Like, if you would have told me 10 years ago, a decade ago, the amount of money that we spend on extracurricular activities, on clubs, on camps, even on vacations now, we've been talking about vacations, I would not have believed you. I would have said, shut up. There's no stinking way. But I think that's more of the reality than not.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Do you agree?
I think it's very true, yeah. And I think the thing
I don't want to approach it from like a defeatist standpoint and being like, you can't win no matter what. Life's going to end up costing you more.
Well, the ways in which you're willing to be frugal, they change too, right? So I remember sleeping in a car, like on a road trip. I remember, like, literally a 3-month road trip, never paid for a place to stay.
Yeah.
We stayed, we were comfortable staying in the most random spots, sleeping in the tent, random places, or just staying in a hostel or something like that.
Yeah.
Or on a stranger's couch, right? The couchsurfing.com. Are things.
Sleeping in a tunnel underneath train tracks in Europe.
Yeah.
Done it.
Those
sketchiest place I've ever spent a night.
Those are things I was not just like willing to do. I was happy to do when I was in my early 20s. And now, like, you could probably pay me to do those things. And so, yeah, it costs more every time I go on a trip. It's not like I've got, you know, Four Seasons sort of taste these days, but I'm just not willing to cut costs to the extreme like I used to be willing to. And so it is worth noting that's true for most people, right?
Totally.
You don't see it, and more power to you if you're still staying in hostels when you're like in your 50s and 60s, but that's just not kind of the way most people roll. So Matt, let's get back to the heart of AJ's question. I think I love how he said that he's going to take care of his own future first. I think it's really, really important, right? Because I think that's the best gift you can give to your child and any future kids you might have.
Absolutely.
It's the oxygen mask on the plane example, right? So putting it on yourself first so that then you can help the person next to you. And I'd say after that, the question isn't as much about how you can invest for your kid's future. The first thing I would ask is, are you making sure you're not scrimping on experiences that would broaden their horizons in their childhood in the coming years, right? You were just talking about the extracurriculars
you fund.
And same over here. I mean, it's not just about making sure they've got $1 million in their retirement accounts by the age of 35, which you could do, right, if you were a proactive saver and investor. It's about the experiences like traveling, camping, learning an instrument, organized sports.
Yes.
Your free time also, right? Making sure
the ability to raise them in a way that reflects your values and how you want them to turn into an adult, basically.
Yeah. So be thinking, I think, and we'll talk about this in a second, about investing on their behalf, but also think about how you can free up more money to prioritize some of those other things.
Totally, totally. Yeah, I feel like we're hearing the term generational wealth more and more these days, and I know some folks find that to be a high priority. It's really important, but it's just not something that we value highly. And over time, I've found myself thinking about investing actual dollars for my kids. I find that to be less and less of a priority. And in some cases, depending on how you handle it, I think going that route, it can actually reduce their own initiative and work ethic. I don't know how many times I've mentioned this on the show, but the Vanderbilt kids, Fortune's Children was the book, but they talked about essentially the downfall of that family. And I think it was Willie Vanderbilt who said that inherited wealth is a handicap to happiness.
Mm-hmm.
It's to ambition as cocaine is to morality. Mm. And so the ability to set your kids up for success in a way, like, we think that money is going to help them. But in fact, like, maybe the best thing that we can do is set a good example for them of what the good life looks like. And then they have the ability to go out there and get it. Sort of like going back to the first question where we're talking about, hey, lay the framework or the foundation for what a healthy relationship looks like with you and your partner. Hopefully that can be a model of what it looks like to live the good life.
So basically, I think what you're saying is you can win the generational wealth battle, but lose the war.
Yes.
You achieve the thing you set out to achieve, and it turns
out... Which is a lot of money.
Yeah.
But then in the end, you end up losing.
There's a reason trust fund kids get a certain kind of rap, right? Mm-hmm. And it's probably not all justified, but there's truly a reason for that. And you read that book about the Vanderbilts. We talk about it. I haven't read it yet. I need to read it. But like the sort of ambition-draining reality of having money in the bank that you haven't earned, that someone else has done for you. I mean... It would sap my ambition. Just to be honest, like if someone gave me $3 million tomorrow, it would probably change my work ethic. And I think
you would have the same fire,
right?
It robs you
of joy. I think
at least like within the developmental years, where you're thinking, okay, what do I want to do with my life?
Yeah.
Where do I want to go to school? How hard am I going to study? How hard am I going to pursue this internship? When you know that in the back of your mind that, oh, I can always fall back on mom and dad. And that's an awesome thing for kids to be able to know that they can count on. There's essentially like a floor, right? Like there's a safety net. And I think you don't want to underestimate the importance of that for kids, the ability of kids to be able to go out there and take risks. But yeah, you don't want to prepare the road for the child. You want to prepare the child for the road.
Yeah. By the way, I wouldn't turn down $3 million. Just saying. If someone out there really, really wants to give it.
If you're feeling it, we'll take it.
But I would say, too, let's talk about like 529 accounts. Because there's obviously nothing wrong with saving something for your kids for their future, especially with the high cost of college these days, if you have the additional financial means. And AJ mentioned that the first account that we would have, too, the 529. If you're crushing your own finances... 529 accounts are the next best place to sock money away if you think your child is likely to go to college. But even if not, if you want to play the new Secure Act 2.0 loophole, because you know you can actually get money from a 529 now into a Roth IRA because of the changes made there. So the good news, by the way, is you get a tax break in many states for making that contribution to a 529 plan. So it's a win for you. You're socking money into an account for your child for their potential future college needs. Or, I mean, you could even use it for private school, I guess, earlier on if you wanted to. But then on top of that, you can funnel that money into a Roth over time down the road as well. I just think that account now allows for a whole lot of flexibility that it didn't used to.
That's right. Yeah. But then beyond that, if you want to funnel more and more dollars into accounts that are under their name, I would say the next goal would be to just directly fund a Roth IRA with them once they have earned income. I think creative parents out there can find ways for their younger kids to earn a little money on the side and therefore start contributing to a Roth earlier than most. Of course, you can wait until they get their first high school job as well. But then another route would be to just put money in a custodial brokerage account in their name. The downside here is that this can reduce their ability to qualify for financial aid for college. And so this is another instance of potentially shooting yourself in the foot or you shooting them in the foot.
don't shoot your kid in the foot.
Like you're trying to help them out, but then you might end up actually missing out on free aid money that they would have qualified for because you do have so much money set aside in their actual name.
All right, so one more thing I think worth mentioning is that you can just give some of your money to your kids as they get older. And so the more money you sock away in your own accounts, the more wealth you're building. Well, you just opt to give them $18,000 a year. At least that's the current amount, right, according to law, without any sort of tax issue.
That's right. And will likely increase, too, over time.
That's right.
Like it's double if you're a couple as well. Like that's for an individual $18,000. So you're looking at $36,000.
Or if your kid gets married, you can give like double that, $72,000, right?
So that's a whole lot of money.
I like this approach, Matt, because you know giving money to your kids when they're on the precipice of buying a new house, let's say, or they are in those kind of 30s years or in those 20s years and they've been doing a great job after college, like they're working hard, that nose to the grindstone sort of thing, and you want to kind of give them a leg up, this is a great time to funnel money into their life.
Yep.
Doing it earlier than that, though, I think can have some of those negative side effects we've talked about. But I mean, I think at that
point, it's still a big chunk of money, though.
Yeah.
I mean, like you said, it's like assuming they get married, they've got a partner, $72,000, you can do a lot of things with $72,000. And I like how that just it provides like a pressure relief valve. It gives you the options to be able to, without tax implications, gift them some money while, like you said, avoid some of the more potential harmful downstream effects of having set aside massive amounts of money that they know about.
I think that's because they're old enough to understand and appreciate your generosity.
Totally agree.
Without hopefully like adopting the spirit that they're entitled to the money that you've worked to build.
Totally.
And I think one last thing is the great thing about owning real estate, paid off real estate, is the stepped up basis, right? When people inherit a home, if your kids were to inherit a home that you owned or multiple homes that you owned over time, going back to kind of the beginning of the episode and investing in real estate, that's one of the great things about real estate. If you own it for always and you never sell it and your heirs inherit it, is that hopefully it was a good investment that went up in value significantly. And there's no tax time bomb at the end of the road either.
Yeah, that's right. So you can always consider real estate just like Chapman's doing. But Joel, we've got another question here. This is from a listener who is maybe he's been accidentally investing with a single company. Let's hear his question about what to do with some of these stocks.
Hi, Joel and Matt. This is Paul from the mountains outside of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And I have a question for you about my company 401k. But first, I want to give you a real quick frugal or cheap. So my local Aldi, the people there have a habit of returning the carts with the quarters left in it. And if I find those carts, I do not use my own quarter and end up with that quarter. And I have a pretty good stash to where I think I can have a free beer soon. So is that frugal or cheap? But the real question is that my company match is automatically put into my portfolio as company stock. Now, that feature has been disabled on Fidelity to change how the match is allocated within my portfolio. So my question is, how often is too often to manually sell that for an S&P 500 or total stock market fund? Thank you very much. I love the show.
Well, Matt, lots to dig into here, but first and foremost, frugal or
cheap?
You want
to do his Aldi frugal or cheap?
First. I'm going to say cheap. And not to throw shade, Paul, but I think the reason people leave the quarter in the cart is to pass on some kindness, right? It's like what people do in the drive-thru, paying for the person behind them, I guess, like for their food too. I've never done that, but it always seems sweet, right?
Yeah, I was going to ask if you've ever done that. I've never done that myself either, but I feel like that would be fun.
Yeah. All right, maybe we'll do that at some point.
Ways to spontaneously give.
But then I guess you're the person who's not passing it on if you just drive off and don't pay for the next one. So you end the chain. And
sweet, free lunch.
Yeah, that might be what you're doing here with this quarter thing. Like, I don't think that you're using it as intended. I think funding your personal stash for the beer purchase, even though you're planning on spending it on something, of course, holy, righteous, and good.
That we would totally get behind.
In the form of craft beer.
A good beer.
Probably don't steal the quarters to do that. That's just my take.
Okay, so initially I would totally agree with you, but the more I thought about it, Joel, the more I realized that the reason those quarters exist is so that Aldi can have a reduced staff. So there's not somebody who's working full-time gathering all the carts out there in the parking lot.
True.
So otherwise it's chaos, right? Like it's just going to end up looking like Costco.
That's the reason for the quarter system, but that's not the reason people leave quarters in the
cart. Right, but if you leave your quarter there, you've provided no incentive for the next person because they're like, well, that's not my money. And then before you know it, you've got a bunch of carts with quarters in them and they're all just... It's not orderly.
Nah, most Aldi customers are too cheap. They ground them all up.
So as I thought about it, though, I thought, well, that sort of short circuits the reason that the quarter even exists, and it sort of breaks the whole system.
Mm.
And so what I would do is go ahead, take the quarter, because you want to contribute to the orderliness, the law and order that Aldi is trying to create.
If you don't do this, Aldi will break down and die.
But then once you have enough for beer, just spend that on a friend. Buy your buddy's beer as opposed to buying it for yourself. That way you're still being generous. You're still paying it forward, but you're not short-circuiting. You're not causing havoc there at Aldi. I just like the system that Aldi has created, and I feel like you're kind of going around it by doing that.
All right. Well, I feel like you're trying to save Aldi, and you're making sure that Paul gets the beer he wants.
Yeah, and he's still able to be... not beer for him. He's going to buy the beer for a friend.
Yeah.
So you can be generous while at the same time participating in the systems and the structure that have been implemented.
All right.
And I think Aldi would get behind that, right? They're a German company. It's all about engineering and...
They're very efficient people.
It's very efficient.
That's right. Clearly they are. If you've been in the one, I mean, the way they're set up, it's very well conceived, and there's just there's not much room for fluff in an Aldi, right?
Yeah.
So that's why you save so much money when you shop there.
Incentives matter. That's all I'm trying to say.
Yep. All right. Let's talk about the 401k match thing, though, because having too much money in your employer stock, in your retirement account, is a really bad thing. No matter what company you work for, I don't care where you work, and you might say, but this stock has done so well over the past 10, 12, 15 years that I've been working there. I've made out like a bandit being in this stock and instead of just kind of a general S&P 500 fund or a total stock market fund like you guys typically talk about. So how could I be wrong? Well, it can work for your benefit. It's important to mention that. Like, if you have worked for Apple or something like that, then you've made out, you've done really well, or NVIDIA. But that still doesn't mean that it's a wise move, because you're not very diversified. You've got too many eggs in one basket. It's just not a good idea to invest substantial sums of money in a single stock, much less the stock of the company that writes your checks.
Yep.
That's just too much concentration. And so that ramps up your risk levels if the company experiences difficult times. Not only could you lose your job, but your retirement funds could see a substantial hit too. That is something worth worrying about.
That's right. Yeah, the goal is to never have the amount of employer stock exposure above 5% of your total investable assets. And even that can be too much. I mean, that's in total with all the other individual companies or crypto or whatever else that you might be interested in investing in. But I think the best way to get out of your company's stock position would be to take a dollar cost averaging approach. That's how you're buying the stocks. And so why not take a similar approach when you are selling it? And so if it's not too much hassle, just log into Fidelity, which is where it sounds like your employer has your 401k, and just immediately sell those shares and instead purchase, let's say, some FZ Rocks, zero expense ratio there. So it's totally free.
Mm-hmm.
And that way you completely eliminate having to think about whether your timing is right, because, you know, you're just executing your plan, basically. You know that this is your system, and every 2 weeks, this is just something that you do. And for other folks, their employer, I mean, they might only match like quarterly or even annually, but you can still keep it simple by selling it as soon as it hits your account. You're not having to weigh the decision of whether or not this is a good time or not. Yeah. I like the sort of knee-jerk automatic reaction of just executing that plan as opposed to having to make a judgment call.
Yeah, I agree. And there's also the behavioral or psychological side to this as well, right? For a lot of folks, the less they log into their retirement accounts, the better. So if you're logging in there every other week, you might be tempted to like fiddle with your allocation.
That's true.
Make some other changes. And you might say, okay, I won't double down on my company stock, but maybe I should be buying up some NVIDIA. It's popping right now. Well, we don't want you doing that either, right? And if that's you, you're more tempted the more often you're actually logged in. Well, just make a quarterly or even annual reminder to sell that stock and buy a more diverse fund with those dollars. Or if you just don't want the hassle of doing it every 2 weeks.
Yep.
And then, you know, I would say a total stock market or an S&P fund, that's likely where you're sticking your other dollars. Just put those dollars in there too and avoid locking in as frequently. So I think it is true, Matt, the less frequently we see what's happening with our retirement accounts, the more likely we are to stay the course. If it's coming out of our paycheck with regularity and we're logging in once a year just to make sure that everything looks okay, we're going to be those folks who stay the course and build wealth.
Totally. Yeah. No, I think there's like so you're talking about being tempted to mess with your investments, but I think there's also the temptation to think you're richer than you are. Like, there is mm-hmm. an impact that those unrealized gains have on you, I think, in how it is that you spend. Because if you see, like we were talking earlier, over the past year, you've seen your portfolio grow significantly, you're thinking, I'm rich. I'm going to go out and finance a finance a car.
Or I don't have the funds to spend 10% of my income on a vacation,
oh my gosh,
but I'll put it on a credit card.
Maybe I'll take a 401k loan. Like, yeah, there's all sorts of other temptations that come with being aware to the fact that your portfolio has grown significantly. And if that were to be the case, I would rather you have like blinders on. I would rather you be completely unaware to it. And so
the wealth effect, man, it's insidious.
It comes down to your personality. And if you know that you can just hop in there, sell, click, buy, be done, log out, then I think the dollar cost averaging approach, that's what I would do personally, because I would want my money out of that single company stock as soon as possible, A, for diversification's sake, but also hopefully for better returns.
Yeah.
And the sooner I can get my money invested more broadly, the happier I'm going to be.
And it's the least amount of time then that your money is in that single stock, and you're de-risking more quickly that way too. The good news on top of that is that this is not a taxable event. When you buy and sell funds or stocks inside of a tax-advantaged account, it doesn't trigger any sort of tax consequences. It would be different if you were like doing that inside of a taxable brokerage account. That would create a capital gain or loss. Not so in a 401k though. So I think the frequency is up to you, whatever works best. We offered a few different kind of routes for you to take, but it's all about de-risking regularly enough that you aren't signing yourself up for undue and unnecessary risk.
Totally. I think Paul's doing the right thing, and it's not that your company is likely going to be the next Enron where it's going to completely ruin your financial future, but it just doesn't make much sense to have a lot of exposure to their stock. I think getting stock options as a result of maybe being at a startup early on, like that's one thing. But being forced to invest in your company with regular stock purchases inside of your tax advantage account is just a whole other thing that we would recommend for you to avoid. But congrats on recognizing this, but also in rectifying it, right? Getting invested in the broader market. We think that's going to get you to where you want to be sooner.
Smart move for sure.
Yep.
All right, Matt, we got a couple more questions to get to, including one about financial regrets, another about timing the market. We'll get to those right after this. Kachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics, and in other words, everything your body craves to feel your best. This is where Kachava really earns their 52,000-plus five-star reviews. It tastes amazing. It's creamy and smooth with just water, and it comes in five delicious flavors. You can choose from chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, and coconut acai. Kachava is offering How to Money listeners 10% off for a limited time. I've been using Kachava in breakfast smoothies in the morning recently. It's just so nice to pack in a bunch of nutrients early in the AM in a way that's satisfying and energizing. So if you want to optimize your breakfast, your workout shake, be sure to check out Kachava. Just go to kachava.com/howtomoney. That's spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's kachava.com/howtomoney. Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org. I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach. Every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host, or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
All right, man, we are back. Let's keep it rolling with the Facebook question of the week, which is from Lori. And she wrote, "Hello, friends. I'm wondering, if I open a Roth IRA this week, am I able to contribute to 2023 until the tax deadline or not, because it was not an active account at the end of the year?"
Can I just say, she says, "Hello, friends." That's how people talk to each other in the How to Money Facebook group.
Hello, comrade.
It's not quite as Marxist as that, but just sweet. Everyone's kind in there, man. It really is a lovely place. So if you're not a part of the How to Money Facebook group, come join.
Head to Facebook, search How to Money. You'll find it. But Lori, to answer your question, this is a quick one. Yes. It doesn't matter if you have never had a Roth before. If you didn't have one open at all in 2023, it doesn't matter, because you can open it up. Let's say on April 14th, for the very first time, you can establish and then fund that account on the same day and not run afoul of the IRS when it comes to the Roth contribution guidelines. As long as your income for last year doesn't exceed what they allow, of course. But specifically, the max income that you can have for a Roth IRA as an individual is $153,000. And if you are married and filing jointly, it's a combined $228,000. So that's really the only thing you need to keep in mind.
Basically, what you're highlighting is that you can move like a sloth and you can still take advantage of this. My kids know how fast they move. They tell me sometimes, like a foot an hour or something like that. Sloths are incredibly slow. And you can be that person, move really slow on the Roth IRA thing, and still have the ability to contribute for 2 years. You still got time.
I picture it more like a rabbit who's just sitting there.
Oh, and waiting tortoise in the hair.
Waiting until the very last second, and then it's just like, boom.
Yeah.
You just do a little hop, boom, you're in.
Yeah, because I guess you could move two slots like and then just miss it altogether. But we would say it's a fantastic idea to prioritize filling the 2023 Roth bucket over the 2024.
Oh, yeah.
Because even if you can't max out both, that's the goal, right? And you never know what could happen with your finances in the coming year. So I think Lori's question, Matt, can act almost as like a public service announcement for everyone out there. You still have time to get money into your Roth for last year. The clock is ticking. Don't be the hare who waits too long, lets the tortoise win, and then you can't, because once that time clock is up, you can never get money into your Roth for a previous year. There's annual contribution limits. And so the more money you can get into the Roth, the earlier you can get it in there, the better it's going to be.
Yeah, I really like the idea of focusing on 2023 and then just setting for yourself a challenge of hopefully being able to contribute some to 2024. But even better, the ability to potentially max that thing out and start even saving for next year, for 2025. That way you've got that money, that cash on hand, ready to deploy.
And let the tax refund be the catalyst for Roth conversions.
Boom.
Too. Because if the average person is getting $3,000, that's almost half of your what you're allowed to contribute to a Roth in a given year. So why not get started with that?
I love it. All right, Joel, let's do one more. And this one is from Anonymous in the Facebook group.
Who's my favorite person?
I'd love to know what you would do differently if you were starting your money journey now. How would you have invested $500 back then, knowing what you know now? And I assume, Joel, that they're asking not like if you knew the future and what horses would win the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah.
They're not asking that. They're not asking like a Back to the Future Part 2 type of question.
No, there's all sorts of things that you'd very much do differently if you had that foresight ability, right? And this is such a smart question, though, I think, because first and foremost, asking the financial regrets question, it can shed some light on how beginners should proceed. If you ask other people and say, what would you have done 10, 15 years ago if you were in my shoes? What an amazing ability to pick somebody's brain and get special insight that's hard to gain from just reading blogs and how-to posts. The goal in this question is to learn from the insights of others who've been there, who've gone before you,
yeah.
And maybe they made a mistake or two along the road, right? Or at least they just didn't do it perfectly. And so I think even those small mishaps, Matt, they cost us money or they prevent us from prioritizing the thing that's going to be in our own best interest. And I'm thinking of two things that I did early on, not like major faux pas or anything like that, but one, I was just too conservative and it makes me think I was investing in target date funds. And then the more I read over time, I was like, wait, the younger I, why am I invest? Why do I have any exposure to bonds? Why am I allocated in this way? And so I went more towards the S&P 500 direction because I saw, especially in those wealth building years, you're costing yourself gains. Another thing I did was paying off student loans too early. My student loan rate, I want to say, was like 1.875%.
Ooh.
And I remember dropping thousands of dollars in one lump sum, and I thought it was the smartest thing I'd ever done. To pay off those student loans when I wasn't able to max out my Roth. I was making so little money, there's no way I could do both.
Ooh.
And so it was just, I should have let that student loan linger and I should have prioritized investing over paying off that debt. Those are the kind of thing, again, not like filing bankruptcy type faux pas or mess ups or anything like that. But still, those are the kind of things I look back on and I'm like, I could have done better.
Well, that's the thing too. It's hard to say that you would have completely done something like drastically different because the things that we experience early on make us into who we are today, right? And so like one of my regrets is that I invested before I had an emergency fund set aside, basically. And what I needed to do is I actually had to reach in and pull some of that money out in order to help cover a move when I was moving to Atlanta. But what I recognized at the time was that that was something that I did not like doing. Like I realized that this isn't what this is for.
This doesn't feel good.
No, it didn't. And it started me down a path of handling my money well. So it was enough of a spark to help me to sort of start writing my ways as opposed to maybe had I not experienced that, I would have continued to make dumb moves. And then further down the line, maybe it would have cost me even more money, perhaps. So I think the ability to learn some of those lessons early on is, I think it's vital.
Makes me think of that Avett Brothers lines, all my mistakes led me to you. It's a love song, right? But it's like, that's the sentiment that you're getting at with our money. It's even our mistakes can like funnel us in the right direction if we learn from them.
Exactly.
And they can actually, I think sometimes they feel so painful that it helps us make progress more quickly after the mistake.
I think that can totally be true. But so this person though is asking how to invest $500 based on what we know now. And let's kind of approach this from the money gear's perspective, because we don't know what job this person has. We don't know where they're at in their career, if they own a home, that kind of thing. And so my first instinct is to tell this person to make sure that they have enough money on hand within that emergency fund in order to weather a potential financial storm. And this is going to my own experience as a single person who had some big expenses come up that I was not prepared for. And I know $500 isn't a lot of money in the grand scheme of things, but not having enough savings on hand can just blow up even your best intentions, your plans, and what you're hoping to be able to do. And so hopefully this is money that you have on top of your already robust savings. But if not, make sure to have that emergency fund in place. And essentially after that, we would tell you to go down the money gears. Like, so after having that basic $2,467 on hand, make sure that you're getting that 401k match, because that's a guaranteed 100% return on your money. This, you're not going to experience any returns anywhere else. But then beyond that, make sure that if you've got any high interest rate debt, that's what you're going to want to focus on. Let's say you don't have that, though, then truly you are looking at investing your dollars. You're looking at towards the different tax advantage accounts, for instance, like the Roth IRA.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So
and you still got time for 2023 to put that $500 in the 2023 Roth, and then hopefully you're able to sock even more into 2024. But I agree, Matt. I love the first thing you said. Like, make sure you have enough for the e-fund. That is huge, because you don't want to have to claw back out those investments. That's super painful. But then outside the realm and the framework of the money gears, and by the way, we'll post a link to an article about the money gears. That's basically our financial order of operations.
Yeah, so we haven't talked about them in a minute. I refer to them like we have, but it's been a second.
Yeah, we kind of lean on those regularly, because it's just a helpful way to identify where you're at in progress with your money and what the next step is for you, what the next goal can be. But the next thing really is to invest in yourself. If you got $500, you know, funnel that towards a degree or a certification. Well, that can have a significant impact on your earnings over the decades, right? Don't just put it into an investment account and cross your fingers and hope for the best. Anything you can do to increase your marketability in today's job market with $500 could be well worth it. Just don't leave that stone unturned. I mean, it can even be, Matt, something like a public speaking class, right? If that's going to help you, you think, get the promotion, get the job that you really want. If you're able to increase what you make, that is like the goose that lays the golden egg, right? You're going to then have much more to invest over the years. If you can use that $500 as kind of like a seed fund for yourself, I think that can be a brilliant approach. And I think oftentimes, especially if you're the hyper-optimized spreadsheet sort of person, a lot of people fail to see that. It's always all about, well, how do I optimize returns and how do I get more money into those tax-advantaged accounts? And that is certainly a good question. But just don't forget about the value that you can that can be derived from kind of boosting your personal capital.
Totally. I love the money gears, but it doesn't leave a whole lot of creativity, right? Because you're just going from like step to step to step. And only you as an individual know some of the different opportunities that are available to you, the different preferences that you have, or like even of the type of work that you want to do, or the opportunities that lie before you. Maybe you are the only person who knows that, like, okay, this is a work trip that's not going to be paid for, but I know if I can make it to this work trip, I'm going to be in the same room as some stakeholders. I don't know. It's like business talk, right? Who have a big impact on my future promotions. Or maybe there's somebody else from a competing company and the ability to get in front of them. Like, there are, I'm just making stuff up, because like there are so many different possibilities depending on what career you have and what industry that you're in, where you have the ability to know, man, yeah, the numbers say I should be paying off this high interest rate debt with that $500. But I know, and my life experience tells me that I should be focusing my efforts in this direction, because like you said, the ability to make a massive increase when it comes to your income could pay for years to come.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's wise.
Yeah, love it. Let's get back to the beer though. How about that?
Let's do it, man. This was Bone Shaker. It's a brown ale by Moat Mountain Brewing Company, donated to the show by Todd. Is this the last beer by Todd?
It is.
I think it is. What were your thoughts?
Well, I told Todd when he dropped the beers off that I want to go running with him at some point, but I don't think I could keep up. So
is he a fast boy?
Oh yeah, I think he's way. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I'm a slow boy, so there's that. I think he's a fast boy and I'm a slow boy, so the
Dude,
gap is huge.
You're totally getting faster.
No, that's
slow, that's true.
Slowly but surely.
Have you started doing
you go from couch to 5K,
the couch,
you know,
to 10K? Do you like the intermediate one? Because you've been running for a minute here. It's not like you've never run before.
No.
Like you've got like a solid foundation.
But Todd's a beast. I think he pounded out like 15 miles or something. I was like, all right, okay, we're different people.
Wait, what does that have to do with this?
Well, he donated the beer. I was just saying.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Just some background on Todd.
But this, I was going to reveal a social security number right now too, but he might be upset. So this is a classic brown ale vibes, I thought. And it was like a little bit bitter. Uh-huh. Some brown ales tend to be a little sweeter. Some tend to be a little more bitter. I kind of like both sides of the equation, but I think I usually prefer bitter. And this one, this was like a just a slightly bitter brown that I really dug.
Yeah, it had those dark, toasty flavors without getting bogged down with like the heavier body, right? Like you have the flavors without the calories mm-hmm. because it's a lighter ABV beer, but also like literally just the weight of it made it a lot easier to drink. So certainly enjoy this one on a beautiful spring day like it is today, man.
Yeah. Thanks, Todd. Appreciate you, man. Matt, that's going to do it for this episode. Again, we'll have links in the show notes up at howtomoney.com. We mentioned a few that I think will be helpful, so please do check that out. But until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.